We have one last aspect of the Sugya of Tfilas Kelim that we've been learning for the last couple of weeks. And that is a combination of two parts of Tfilas Kelim, two issues that come with very much relevant Lamaisa. Last week we spoke about the Tvila in the sense of what constitutes a mikvah. And now we're going to talk about what constitutes an act of Tvila, particularly what are some of the issues of Chatzitza as it relates to Tfilas Kelim. And then the second half of this year about the bracha that's recited at the time of Tfilas Kelim. So we're all familiar with the din of chatzitza when we speak about a person going to the mikvah, but the Mishnayos tell us in Maseches Mikvos that the din of chatzitza pretty much carry over to kelim as well. What are the rules, what are the basic rules that govern chatzitzas, both in terms of tefillas adam as well as tefillas kelim? So the Gemara tells us in the first of the Mar Mikomos, in Maseches Sukkah and Davav Amid Aleph, that chatzitza deraisa ninu. The Gemara is actually asking, I think there's one line in the middle of the sugya, but the Gemara previously spoke about the fact that the halachas of chatzitza are halach l'moshe m'sinai. When we use the term halach l'moshe m'sinai, so we mean that something which isn't really alluded to in the Chumash itself, something which is a pure tradition, ish v'pish and Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara tells us that the details of ilchos chatzitza fall into that category of halachas, halach l'moshe m'sinai. So we ask the Gemara, what do you mean? That chatzitzin, a pure halach l'moshe m'sinai, chatzitzin deraisin inu. The fact that when a person goes to the mikvah, or the case that's relevant for us, when a kli goes to the mikvah, that one cannot have something separating between the person or the kli and the water of the mikvah, this is not just halach l'moshe m'sinai, this is in the Torah Shebichtav as well. Tichsiv, v'rachatz, es b'saro b'mayim, shlo yehidav v'chotzeitz b'no l'vein amayim. We dash in from the pasuk itself, that speaks about rechitza b'mayim, which means that the water has to touch the person's body, or for our case, the water has to touch the kli. So this is a din of Torah Shebichtav. This is explicitly in the Chumash. It's not necessary to declare that this is a pure halacha moshe m'sinai. So the Gemara says, no, ki asoy huchos al v'sa'aro. When we say that that chatzitzas are halacha moshe m'sinai, we're not referring to about chatzitza on gufa adam, on the body of a person. We're talking about chatzitza on the person's hair. Because the pasuk says, v'rachatz is b'saro b'mayim. So I would have thought that just based on the Torah Shebichtav, I would have thought that chatzitza only governs the person's body, kamash v'lan d'alach moshe m'sinai, that it governs the person's hair as well. And then the Gemara goes into the details as to what's considered to be a chatzitza. But here again, we're not learning the sugya of chatzitza for a person, so we're going to skip on a little bit further. So the Gemara finally concludes three lines, the third line of the first Mar Malchum, at the end of the line, ki asoy hilchos halacha d'Rabbi Yitzchak, that the real halacha moshe m'sinai of chatzitzas is not to tell me that there is a din of chatzitza, and not to tell me that chatzitza applies to the hair and to the body. The real halacha moshe m'sinai of chatzitza is as follows: the Amr b'Yitzchak, Dvar Torah ruba umakben alav chotzeitz. The halacha moshe m'sinai tells us what are the rules that govern a chatzitza, what constitutes a chatzitza min haTorah, and what doesn't. So the tradition that we have, going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, is that there are two factors that determine whether something is a chatzitza. One is volume, how much of the body, or in our case the kli, is covered by the Dover HaChotzeitz, and whether the person wants it to be there or doesn't want it to be there. That's what's called whether he's makbid on it, whether the person wants to remove the item or not. So min haTorah, something is only considered a chatzitza if it has both of those conditions. It's rubo u'makbid alav. That's the tradition of halacha moshe m'sinai. It has to be on most of the person's body and most of the kli, and it has to be something that you're upset about, you're concerned with, you want to actually remove. However, if either one of these two conditions are missing, then min haTorah, it's not considered to be a problem, but it's still a problem in the Rabbanah. That's what the Gemara continues, and again, in the fourth line, Dem Rabbi Yitzchak, Dvar Torah ruba machbid alav chotzeitz. Min haTorah, you need both conditions. V'she'eino machbid alav eino chotzeitz. But if you're not machbid on it, it's not a problem. V'gozu arubo she'eino machbid b'shem ruba ha-machbid. V'amiyuto ha-machbid b'shem ruba ha-machbid. And then the Chachamim added on two gezeiras de Rabbanah. There were two dinim derabbanan that were instituted in Hilchos Chatzitzas. One is to say that if you have a rove of something, even if you don't care about it, that's a problem. And the second dinim derabbanan was, even if it's only a miut, but you do care about it, you do want to remove it, that's also a problem. It's that second dinim derabbanan that is the source for 99.99% of the Chatzitza issues, both in terms of people as well as in terms of kelim. Min haTorah, you're almost never going to get a Chatzitza. Either for a person or for a kli. Chatzitza for a person in a Torah would mean the person just went mud sliding and they didn't take a shower and they want to go into the mikvah. So that's absurd. So that's a ruba, maybe a ruba machmir alav. All the chatzitza showers that we have, a woman has a bandage, she forgot to take out her contact lenses, she's got cotton in her ear, she's got a million different kinds of chatzitzas. All these chatzitzas are all miut, and if they're miut ha-makbid, then they're a problem, a dirabanan. If they're a miut she'ina makbid, if you don't care about it, then mikra din is going to be okay. And this is what governs the rules of tefillas kelim as well. This is the part of the shiur that's relevant for us. If I have a kli and I have something on the kli that I care about, I really want to remove, I just haven't gotten around to removing it yet. So although min haTorah that would not invalidate the tefillas kelim, mid the rabbanim it would. So anytime you have on a kli anything that you care about, even if it's a very small piece, that's a problem. So some of the common shahs that we have in terms of tefillas kelim, one of the very common shahs is labels. You have a label on a kli. So it's a mir, it's not on the entire kli. On the other hand, you may be machbid on it. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. It depends. So some labels people like to keep on. They want everyone to see what fancy, expensive a kli they have. So that's called a mir she'ena machbid. Whereas if you have another kind of a kli, which people are machbid to remove, you don't want a label on your pot. You don't want a label on your silverware. You want to remove it. So that's called the mir ha-machbid. If you went ahead and tevled your kelim without removing the label, you would have to repeat the tevila. Although min haTorah you were yotze because it was a miyut, but mid rabbanon that would be included in this gzer rabbanon that the Gemara is telling us in Maseches Sukkah. Sometimes it's hard to determine whether something is called a machbid or not, both for tevilas adam and for tevilas kelim. Who makes that determination? Is it the person who's doing the toveling, or is it the standards of most people? So the Rishonim have a machlekes about this, and the Shulchan Aruch we paskin that either one of those can constitute a machbid. So if you have something that most people are concerned about, even though I personally don't care about it, that's a problem. Or if I'm particular about it, even though most people don't care about it, that's also a problem. I remember somebody recently asked me a shah, they went to Tevel Kalim, and they came back, and there was a little something on the bottom of the kli, and the wife was all upset about it. Why didn't you remove it? So the guy says, I don't think anybody cares about it. Nobody cares about it. I don't care about it. So the wife said, but I care about it. So he called me up and he wants to know, what's the din? He says, my wife cares about it. I don't think anybody else cares about it. My wife cares about it, but I don't care about it. So is that considered to be a davar machbir or not? So I responded, not so much in the role of a rav, but more of in terms of a shalom bayis individual. I said, if your wife's machbir on it, then you're machbir on it. And if not, then you're in much more serious trouble than you have in terms of whether you have a sticker on your cleat. Take the shalom al hachana. The poskim say that the Gemara says Masechah Shabbos that you're not supposed to wash the dishes on Shabbos afternoon if you're not planning on using them anymore until after Shabbos. That would be hachana. The poskim write, let's say the dirty dishes mamish bother you. You walk Shabbos afternoon and you see the whole sink full of filthy dishes, so it's staring you on Shabbos. So the poskim say it's okay. So usually a week or two after a guy gets married, so he calls me with the shalom, he says, well, my wife claims that the dirty dishes bother her. They don't particularly bother me. Is that okay? So that's also called Onik Shabbos. To make sure your wife's Onik Shabbos doesn't get shtered, that's also part of your Onik Shabbos. So getting back to the story, so anytime you have anything that touches on a shayla of machbid, your machbid, the oil was machbid, that would be a problem.
If you remove most of that sticker that you were machbid on, there's still a little bit left.
So it depends how much you're machbid on that little bit left.
So
that's the answer. It depends. If you're not so machbid on it, that's okay. Sometimes it looks worse. If you have half a sticker, it's worse than a whole sticker. Right.
A little glue. Right.
Some of that would be okay. Right. So it's this halacha of chatzitza that poses a whole issue in terms of standard tefillas kelim. Namely, how is one supposed to hold the kli when tevelin kelim? So if you think about it, every time I hold the kli and put it into the mikvah, there's an automatic built-in chatzitza. The place where I'm holding onto the kli is not getting exposed to the water. So why shouldn't that be a problem? So maybe it is a problem. Maybe the solution is to drop the kli in. So it depends. If the mikveh is not that deep, maybe that's an option. If the mikveh is deep, so then if you have a basket with holes in it, okay, make sure that the holes aren't bigger than the kli that you're dropping in. So maybe that would also work. But what if a person doesn't have any of these options? You want to literally hold the kli as you're toiling it. Should that be a problem or not? So this is already a Mishnah, Maseches Mikvos. And the Shulchan Aruch in the second of Marmakamos pretty much paraphrases that Mishnah. So the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Kuf Chaf in Siv Beis, in the second of Marmakamos, so the Shulchan Aruch says, Tzarech sheyehei akli roughly biyada b'shas tevila. That a person has to be careful when they're holding on to the kli that they're toveling, that their hand is fairly loose. Sheyemahadka biyada v'chatzitza. Because if you're going to hold kli too tight, so then the water's not going to get in and that's going to be a chatzitza. This is the general rule of Hilchos Chatzitza. That the things that are loose don't pose a problem with chatzitza for the simple reason that the water actually gets in. That's what the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Mikvos, that if a woman wants to go to the mikveh with jewelry on, sometimes the jewelry is a problem and sometimes it's not. If the rings are tight, So then it's a problem. The water's not going to get under. If the ring is fairly loose and the water's going to get under, then it wouldn't be a problem. So we have a minhag that we always remove all jewelry when going to the mikvah. We don't want to take any chances. It's called tight, it's called loose. But if the ring is loose, then strictly speaking, the water gets under and it wouldn't be a problem. We have the shayla every once in a while. Sometimes a woman, especially after pregnancy, sometimes the finger swells up a little bit and it's hard to get the ring off the finger. So it's not that the ring is tight. You can move the ring around. The water gets under. It just can't get over the hump. It can't get over the knuckle. So the post can say that Meikra did, as long as the ring is loose and it can move around, so she could technically go to the mikvah with the ring on. If it's mamish tight, so then it's mamish fresh mishnah, then it would be a problem. So that's again based on the same halacha. And whenever you're holding onto something loose, so the water is able to get under. So one eitzah to Tovel and Kalim is to hold the kli not all that tight. So there are some Rishonim who question whether this is a good idea or not. There's actually a machlokes to know about this. There are some Rishonim who are not so excited about this idea of Tovel and Kalim holding on to it loose, because you let somebody hold on to it loose, the guy's holding his expensive, you know, a kli, and he's afraid to hold it too loose, he's going to grab onto it a little bit tighter, so it may lead to a problem of chatzitza. So there are some poskim who don't like this eitza as much, but mikra did in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that it would be acceptable. But then there's a second suggestion that Shulchan Aruch quotes also from the Mishnayos, v'mechlech yado b'mayim tchila ein lachush. What if a person wet his hands before he's holding on to the clay, so that it for sure will be okay? Why is that? So we assume that, let's say a person washes his hands beforehand, and now he's holding on to the clay, even if he's holding the clay tight, but the water that's on his hands becomes mechuba to the man mikvah. It becomes halachically part of the mikvah water, so it's as if there's no chatzitza, because there's water at the time that I'm toiveling, there's water that's touching the entire clay. So that eitza presumably should work. Comes to Ramon, says not so fast. The only time that this suggestion works is if the person actually used the mikvah water to get on his hands. So says the Ramah, if you're coming to the mikvah and you want to tovel your kli, and you want to hold on to the kli tight, so you should stick your hand into the mikvah first. So now you have mikvah water on your hands. Now you can hold on to the pot, hold on to the glass, hold on to the silverware, and stick it back inside. So that water that's on your hands, between your hands and the kli, is mechuba to the man mikvah. And that's okay, provided that it was main mikvah to start with. If you took water from the faucet, and you're now holding on to the kli, so that trick is not going to work. That's the Ramah's compromise. So the Ramah's willing to accept this idea of wetting your hand first, but only if you wet your hands with the mikvah water first. So a lot of poskim have issues with this halacha in both directions. There are some poskim who question, why should we insist that you have to wet your hands with the mikvah water? The halacha is an uchas mikvah, so if I have a kosher mikvah, and then I add more water to the mikvah afterwards, even if it comes from, we spoke about last week, maim she'uvim, even if it comes from a kli that was inside a utensil, that water becomes part and parcel of the mikvah. So what's the difference whether I wash my hands with mikvah water or I wash my hands with sink water? The minute I stick that my hand into the mikvah, the sink water becomes mikvah water. So I accomplish the exact same thing. So that's what some folks can have an issue in that direction. Other folks can raise a question, how could this stunt work? How does this trick work? Says that the only time water is considered to be part of the mikvah is if it's connected to the mikvah. But if I'm holding my hand tight on the kli, so then I've broken up the connection between that water and the mikvah. So now, that water that's supposedly touching the kli, that's very nice, but that's not mikvah water anymore. Even though it came from the original mikvah, that was 10 minutes ago. But once I take it out of the mikvah, if I take a cup full of mikvah water and take it out of the mikvah, it's not mikvah water anymore. It's only mikvah water, but it's still mechuba to the man mikvah. So once I'm holding the kli tight, so that water becomes on my hand, in between my hand and the kli, but it's no longer mechuba, no longer connected to the mikvah. So poskim have a lot of issues with this halacha in both directions. Some, the Ramah says that as long as you wash your hands with the mikvah water, you're okay. If you wash your hands with other water, then it's a problem. So some posts can say they don't understand why all water shouldn't be okay. Another post can say they're not sure why any water should be okay. So you name whichever objection to the Ramah you want. But the mice of the Ramah paskins this middle ground. The Ramah paskins that it's still technically okay. That's what the minhag olam is that when people tovel kalim, so they do one of two things. Either they hold the kli not all that tight, or they stick their hands into the mikvah first. So I strongly recommend you should stick your hand into the mikvah first, and that way Meikra Din is going to be okay. That way, according to the Ramah, no matter how tight you held it, Meikra Din is going to be okay. But again, either one of these eitzes would be good enough, but the washing your hands in the mikvah water is probably the safer of the two. So a kopanim is we learned last week that the tefillah has to be done in a kosher mikvah, whatever those standards are. The tefillah has to be covered by the regular halachos of chatzitza, whatever they are. And since tefillas kelim is a regular mitzvah, if you're toveling metal kelim, we assume it's probably a deraisa. If you're toveling glass, it's only a derabanan. But afal b'chen, it's for sure a mitzvah, and therefore it warrants a bracha, no different than any other mitzvah. So whenever you have a kli that's for sure obligated in tefillah, it has to be toveled with a bracha. But the evidence, if you didn't make a bracha, the tefillah is still ksheir, the bracha, it doesn't disqualify, the lack of the bracha doesn't disqualify the mitzvah. But midrabanan is a requirement to recite birchas mitzvahs. So birchas mitzvahs is recited both for mitzvahs d'araisa as well as for mitzvahs d'rabanan. Therefore, there's no question that if you tevel a real glass kli that's for sure chayev, one should have to recite a bracha. However, what if the following shall happen? What if a person went to the mikvah, he was so excited to do the mitzvah, he sticks the kli in, and then he realizes, oh my goodness, I forgot to make the bracha. So should he recite the bracha at that point or not? So this is not really a tefillas kelim shaila. We'll see in a moment, it's going to become a tefillas kelim shaila in a minute, but this is more of a general bracha shaila. We have a rule in Uchas Brachas that we recite the bracha before we perform the mitzvah. 99% of the mitzvahs are like that. Before we eat the matzah, we recite the bracha. Before we blow the shofar, we recite the bracha. Before we read the Megillah, we recite the bracha. What is the din if a person made a mistake and did the mitzvah first? Can he now make the bracha afterwards? So the Rambam in the third of the Mamakomos, in Uchas Brachas, Berakid Aleph, Halachas Hay and Vav, draws a distinction between different types of mitzvahs. So says the Rambam in Halacha Hay, the Oisa mitzvah v'lo birich. A person by mistake did a mitzvah and forgot to make a bracha. Im mitzvah she'adayin asiyasa kayemes. If it's a type of a mitzvah that hasn't been completed yet, he hasn't finished yet. So mevarich achar asiya. So then with the average you can recite the bracha after the mitzvah is totally done. V'imdavar she'avarhu eina mevarich. But if it's a mitzvah that has been completed already, then one cannot recite a bracha. Ketzad, what do these cases mean? Hareshidas ati patzitzis. One is supposed to recite a bracha on one's tzitzis before putting the tzitzis on. So we do. Make a bracha with ati patzitzis, then you put your talis on. What if a person by mistake put the talis on, and he realizes 10 minutes later, he forgot to recite a bracha? O shalavash tefillin. Or if a person put the tefillin on already, and forgot to make a bracha. So again, lechatchila, you make the bracha first, then you put in the tefillin. What if a person goofed, and now he has his tefillin on? Or he sat down the sukkah, he's halfway through his meal, and he realizes he forgot to make a leisha b'sukkah. So in all of these mitzvahs, chozu u'mevarach, he could still recite the bracha afterwards, achash nesatev, asher k'dishon mitzvahs as well nesatev atzitzis, v'chein b'mevarach achash olav ashla adich tefillin, v'yachash yashav leisha b'sukkah, v'chein kol kayotza be'elum. The common denominator of these three mitzvahs is that there's an ongoing fulfillment, there's an ongoing kiyum. The more a person keeps the talis on, the greater the mitzvah is. The longer he's wearing the tefillin, the longer the mitzvah. The more he stays in the sukkah, the longer the mitzvah. So even though it's true that for the first 20 minutes of the mitzvah he blew it by not reciting the bracha, but his bracha will take effect on the subsequent fulfillment of the mitzvah. So normally this is reserved for b'di'evit. We don't like to do this l'chadchila, but there are some times when we even do this l'chadchila. Poskim write that this time of year it's not too common, but in the winter time it gets a little bit more common. If a person has to daven a little bit early, and it's not quite this man for putting on talis and tefillin, so there are some opinions that maintain that one should put the talis and tefillin on first, even though it's before this man, and then you recite the bracha at a later point. How can you make the bracha later? It's not over l'siyasa, it's not before the mitzvah. That's what the Rambam writes. But d'yavid, you can do that. If you're stuck, you can do that, because the mitzvah is still an ongoing type of mitzvah. So these are the three mitzvahs that the Rambam singles out, l'niach tefillin, l'sati b'tzitz, and l'shi b'sukkah, that the bracha can still be made afterwards. However, in halacha vav, the Rambam writes, v'alim shachat b'loi bracha, what if a person shechted an animal and didn't recite a bracha? Then it's too late already. You can't recite a bracha after the shechita is over. Kisa adam below bracha, or if a person does kisi adam, he covers the blood of a bird or a wild animal that he shechted. So he's supposed to make a bracha first. He forgot he did the kisi first. So hifish chuma umaisrus, or he was mafish chuma umaisrus. Oh shetovel below birech, or he was tovel and didn't recite a bracha. So the Rambam listed off a whole bunch of different mitzvahs that it's not, you cannot recite the bracha after the mitzvah is over, because there's no ongoing fulfillment. It's a one-time deal. It's a one-shot deal. Once the ma'isa mitzvah is over, then it's too late. So one of the examples that the Rambam gave us was tevila. So the Rambam says tevila is a very, very complicated example. The Rambam was talking about tevilas adam, because the Rambam was assuming that a person recites a bracha before they go to the mikvah. So that happens to be the view of many, many Rishonim, but it's not the practice in Ashkenazi communities for a totally different reason. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim that when a ger goes to the mikvah, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of gerus, he has to go to the mikvah. and he has to recite a bracha, so he cannot recite the bracha before he goes under the water, because he's not Jewish yet. So obviously the bracha on Tefillas Geirus has to take place after he comes out. So most, many of the Rishonim hold, but that's only true. But we'll see where the second daven comes from. So the ikra din, you only need one tefillah. The second tefillah, we'll see where that fits in. So when a ger comes to the mikvah, for him to recite the bracha before he goes under would be absurd. He's not Jewish. I can say Shekin Rishon Mitzvah Sivanu. So he has to recite the bracha afterwards. So many of the Rishonim, including the Rambam, hold that's a special din by tefillah's ger that has nothing to do with regular tefillah. When a woman goes to the mikvah, why shouldn't she recite the bracha first? It's like any other mitzvah. Recite the bracha and then go under. So that's what the view of the Rambam is. That's the view of the Shulchan Aruch. So Tosfos quotes an opinion that has become the prevalent meaning in Ashkenazi communities that just as Chazal instituted that a ger has to recite the bracha afterwards, as a low plug in Hilchos Brachas. We want to keep uniformity in Hilchos Brachas. We don't want to have that some people go to the mikvah and recite the bracha before. Sometimes you recite the bracha after. Every time it's a different story. So they made a takon across the board. All tefillahs of a person, the bracha is always recited afterwards. Because of that one in a thousand cases when a ger goes to the mikvah. So according to that view, which is the way the Ramah accepts, which is what our practice is that when women go to the mikvah, they recite the bracha dafke after they finish toveling, rather than before they tovel. Because we're a little bit concerned with this, because according to many Rishonim, that's really a bracha levatola, because the mitzvah is over already, so they became a minhag to go a second time. Means the whole second tefillah was only instituted as a way to chap around like a little bit of ovelas yosan. So that's what the standard bidding in that community is that the woman goes under first. At that point, she really becomes tahor. At that point, the tefillah is really done. Then she comes out, and then she recites the bracha and goes down a second time. So that second tefillah doesn't really accomplish all that much, but somewhat it's enough. It's a mashu to be considered to be like an ovelas yosan. It's similar to another minhag that we have when women bench lech. So we should really recite the bracha Lahadik Neshel Shabbos before you light the candles, like any other mitzvah. The only problem is there's one opinion in Rishonim that maintains once you recite that bracha, then you can't light a candle anymore because it's a Kabbalah Shabbos. So therefore we have a minhag in Ashkenazi communities is that the woman lights the candles first and then she recites the bracha. But we feel bad that it's really out of order. The correct order is really the bracha first. So what do we do to somehow salvage it a little bit so she doesn't look at the candles? Because if you don't close mind, you don't really benefit from the candles. You haven't really fulfilled the mitzvah yet. The whole purpose of the candles is to enjoy them on Onik Shabbos. That's what the minhag is, that she likes the candles, doesn't look, makes the bracha, then opens up her eyes. Oh, now I'm enjoying the candles. Now it's considered to be ovelas yosan. So those two minhagim that we have, both in terms of tevila and in terms of halachas neir Shabbos, are kind of ways to make it a little bit of ovelas yosan, even though it's not technically ovelas yosan. But the Rambam sheet is clear that any mitzvah that's a one-time shot, a one-time maisa, if the maisa was done already, then there's nothing you can do anymore and you lost the bracha. So putting aside tefillas adam for a second, just in terms of tefillas kelim, l'chor, that should be the din, but tefillas kelim, if a person by mistake put the kli into the mikvah and then they realize, I forgot to make a bracha, it's too late, so you cannot make the bracha anymore. Unless one argues, what if a person remembers that they didn't make the bracha, the kli is still under the water of the mikvah. So a person tevels the kli, they're about to pull the kli out, and they realize, oh my goodness, I forgot to make the bracha. So can they still make the bracha now, according to the view of the Rambam? So that's a shalom posel. Some poskim argue that kolzman, the kli hasn't come out yet, so it's technically, the tefillah hasn't finished yet. So maybe that's still considered like almost like a little bit of avlas yosan. So if you're going to forget to make a bracha, at least remember at that point. But if you already yanked the kli out of the water, then forget it. It's too late. The tefillah is still acceptable, but you would not be able to recite a bracha. So the normal state of Dvarim with Tefillas Kelim is obvious, that you make the bracha first, and then immediately you put the kli into the water. What you're not supposed to do after you recite the bracha is to talk. Because if you talk in between the recitation of the bracha and the Tefillas Kelim, that constitutes a hefsek, and as an interruption between the bracha and the mitzvah, you would be required to recite a new bracha. Unless the talking was relevant for Tefillas Kelim. So let's say, for example, you made the bracha, and you're about to tover the kli, and you realize that there's a big label on the kli, so you can't find the nail polish remover. So you start asking somebody, yeah, can somebody find me something to get this label off? Whatever's mitzorach ha'inyan, that would be all right. That's what the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, that if a person recites a motzi, and then they realize there's no salt, they realize they forgot to feed the animals, they forgot can't find a knife, anything that's relevant for the meal, so that technically doesn't qualify as a hefsek. But short of that, if a person was mafsik between the bracha and the mitzvah, then one would be required to recite the bracha over again. Tosfos point out that one is not permitted to interrupt between a bracha and a mitzvah. It doesn't matter whether the bracha precedes the mitzvah or those mitzvahs that the mitzvah precedes the bracha. Let's say when a woman benches lech. So a lot of women do this, that they'll light the candles, and then they're not quite ready to make the bracha. They're still busy. They're still running around. It's getting close to this mod, so they want to make sure the candles are lit, and they're still running around for another 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes later, they'll make the bracha. That's not right, because that's also considered to be a hefsek between the mitzvah and the bracha. There's no difference whether you're mafsik between the bracha before the mitzvah or the mitzvah before the bracha. Let's say by the tilos yadayim. So for technical reasons, we have a minhag, Ashkenazim have a minhag, to wash first and recite the bracha afterwards. So the poskim write, you're not allowed to talk. Once you wash your hands, then you're not allowed to talk until you make the bracha. There's a common misconception out there that as long as you haven't made the bracha yet, you're allowed to talk. So the poskim point out, it's the exact opposite. If you already made al tilos yadayim, then to talk after al tilos yadayim is probably not so bad. According to many Rishonim, you're allowed to talk after all of this and I before you make a motzi. Others disagree, so our meaning is we don't. But in terms of the hierarchy of not talking, it's much more important not to talk between the netilas yadayim and the bracha. That's for sure a problem. That's mikra dinner problem. That's for sure considered to be a hefsek. So there is no such minhag. Some people say there's a minhag. I remember once one of my kids came home from school and they said that one of their friends told them the minhag in their family is to talk between washing and clothes by and you haven't made the bracha. So I tried a very nice diplomatic way to explain it. It's called a minik toast. It's not exactly a minik, but I try to say it in a nice, polite way. Anyway, get back to the story. So there's no question you're not supposed to be talking after you recite the bracha until you do tefillas kelim. What if a person has a lot of kelim to toivel? See, coming to the mikvah pesach, I got 10 sets of silverware and 100 pots to be toivel. So what's the din? Are you permitted to talk as long as you started doing the mitzvah? Or do you have to wait until the very last pot? You can be quiet for hours until you finish tefillas kelim. What's the din? So this is also not uniquely a tefillas kelim shaila. This is a general shaila about all mitzvahs. Whenever you make a bracha and you start doing a mitzvah, and the mitzvah, you do it 100 times over, so do you have to keep quiet from the beginning of the bracha until you finish all the Maisa mitzvahs? Or do we say, as long as you started the mitzvah, that would be enough? So this is a throwback to the sugya in Maseches Menachos in the fourth of the Ramah Mekamos, in Menachos, Daf Lamed Vav, Amin Aleph. Amar Rav Chizda, Sach ben Tfilu L'Tfilu Chayze Mevarech. If a person speaks between the Tfilu Shal Yad and Tfilu Shal Rosh, so he would have to recite another bracha. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Sach in lo sach lo. It sounds like, if you didn't talk, then you're okay. Then you just make one bracha and you're fine. Hashalach Rav Chia, Bered Rav Huna, Mishmed Rav Yochanan, Al Tfilu Shayad, Ome Baracha Shek Kedishan, Mitzvah Yisrael, Niach Tfilin, Al Tfilin Shayrosh, Ome Baracha Shek Kedishan, Mitzvah Yisrael, Al Mitzvah Tfilin. So it sounds like you always have to make two brachas. So why does the Gemara say you only make two brachas if you spoke? So by Varav, the Amit Shavai, Lo Sach Mavarach, Achas Sach Mavarach Shtayim. So there is a question how to read this Gemara. We're going to present it the way most of us follow. The Minhag of the Ashkenazim is, we assume what the Gemara means is as follows. The normal protocol for putting on Tfilin is, each one of the tefillin gets its own bracha. So you make a laniach on the shal yad, and you make an amitzas on the shal rosh. That's the standard practice for most of us. However, the Gemara says, if you spoke in between, so then you have to recite a third bracha. Namely, you have to repeat the bracha of laniach. The bracha of laniach really goes on both, and amitzas goes on shal rosh. If you spoke and you broke up the continuity between the bracha and the shal rosh, then you have to repeat the bracha of laniach. So in theory, a person could end up making three brachas on his tefillin. He makes laniach on the shal yad. If he spoke at that point, then you make another laniach, and then another al mitzvah, then you make an al mitzvah as well. So you see from this Gemara Maseches Menachos, that even though I started the mitzvah, I made laniach, and I put on the shal yad, but if I spoke before I finished the mitzvah, that's also a problem, that would warrant making another bracha. So the Rishonim have a question, how far does this rule go? So in the fifth of the Ramah Mekamos, Tosfos in Maseches Chulin, Pei Zayim and Aleph, raises the following question. Yesh listapik, im soch ben shchita l'shchita, im tzorach l'achzu l'varech. A person is shechting 100 animals. He makes a bracha al shchita, he shechts one or two animals, and then he starts to talk. And now he wants to continue the job. Is he required to recite another bracha or not? So Tosfos wasn't sure. Is that the same as talking in between tefillin? What's the shayla? So yesh listapik, im soch ben shchita l'shchita, im tzorach l'achzu l'varech, kamo gabi tefillin. Whatever that means, Machlokes Rashi or Ben Tam, we're going to skip a little bit what that means towards the end of the line. Oshem ein tzorach lachzul levarich, kamo beemtzas suda shiyachal ledab. If ein tzorach lachzul levarich hamotzi, so Tosfos says we're getting seemingly contradictory indications from different areas of halacha. When it comes to the area of halacha of hilchas tefillin, so any talk in the middle requires another bracha. When it comes to the area of making a bracha on food, you make hamotzi, and then you talk in the middle of the meal, and you keep on eating. No big deal. Person makes a burp, eats an apple. You take a bite of the apple, then you can talk, and they continue eating. So we don't say that talking in the middle disqualifies the bracha. So when do we say that talking in the middle disqualifies and when not? So we have two extremes in halacha. We have in the case of tefillin, where talking does disqualify the bracha, it requires a new bracha. We have the case of bracha on food, where talking doesn't affect the validity of the bracha. So Taz is not quite sure where to put other mitzvahs. Where do you stick sach ben shchit l'shchit in the middle of this? A person talks in the middle of shechting multiple animals, would you have to make another bracha or not? So the halacha shulchan aruch, we're not quite sure what the din is. Both days are quoted. So the poskim right, we treat it like a little bit of a sfeik of the din. We're not really sure. We wouldn't tell you to make another bracha. On the other hand, we would expect you not to get yourself into such a suffix. You should be careful not to get yourself involved in such a shayla. So it's based on this that the poskim write in many, many areas of halacha. Let's say a marshal person is putting up a lot of mezuzahs. So he just moved to his house. He's putting up 20 new mezuzahs. So he makes the bracha likvah mezuzah. He puts up one mezuzah. He shouldn't talk until he finishes all the mezuzahs. Because if he talks in the middle, then according to half the Rishonim, he has to make a new bracha. And since according to the other half the Rishonim, he doesn't, he just stuck himself into a predicament of a suffering brachas. So therefore, the poskim recommend that a person should be careful not to talk until he finishes all the ma'aseh mitzvahs. So the same presumably should be true when it comes to tefillas kelim. A person recites a bracha al tefillas kelim, so he's for sure not allowed to talk when he's tefillin the first kli, but he shouldn't talk until he finishes the last kli. So hours later, he's tefillin 100 pieces, so he should really be quiet the entire time, because otherwise he's got himself into a predicament of a suffering brachas. Going back to what we said before, if the reason why he had a talk was may also inyan, if it was something which was letzorech hatvila, he needs somebody to hand him the kli, he needs somebody to unwrap something, he needs somebody to hand him the nail polish remover, okay? So whatever is considered to be letzorech hatvila wouldn't constitute a hafsik. But short of that, one should be careful not to be hafsik. So a kopon of hukhas tvilas kelim covers the basic rules, carries over the same basic rules of hukhas brachas, that it is a mitzvah. So if it's a mitzvah deraisa, it requires a bracha. If it's a mitzvah derabbanan, it requires a bracha. If it's a suffix, whether this particular kli requires a bracha or not, then we apply suffix brachas lahakha. One should not recite the bracha. The bracha has to be recited over lasiyah. So you have to recite the bracha before you begin to do the mitzvah. One should not be mafsik in between the bracha and the mitzvah. And when we say not to be mafsik, so depending on what you hold about the shchit and the tefillin story, so that's the same shalom when it comes to the tefillas kelim as well. Remember when we first got married, that's usually when you spend most of the time in the kelim. So we had a type of all the stuff we had gotten for our wedding gifts. So there was another couple who had just moved into our building, also just got married around the same time. So they had loads of stuff also. So we piled everything into the car, and both couples went down to the heights at the time. So we spent 2-3 hours just toiling everything. So we started to toil the stuff, be it the other husband, and we weren't talking. As it says in the poskim, based on this din, that you're not supposed to talk until you finish. So remember at the time, we hadn't explained to our wives why we weren't talking, so they couldn't figure out what was going on. So after 2 hours of so I finally explained to her that it's a taisus in Maseches Chulin that says that you're not really supposed to talk. So they found it to be a tremendous chiddush. I never heard of such a thing. So whatever, you read the taisus in Chulin, so you realize that it's a mefarshus suffering the taisus, whether you're allowed to talk or not. So chalpanim, I think we could pretty much make a siyum on the dinim of tefillas kelim. So we spoke over the last couple of weeks which kelim have to be tovel, how to tovel kelim, brachas, chatzitzas, what's kasher mikvah. So we pretty much finished the unit of tefillas kelim. What the next year is going to be is going to depend on when the next year we're going to be. So I'm not sure about next week. We'll get an email out. I'm not sure what the schedule is for next week. We may be able to cut maybe 1 to 2 more shiurim before the summer. So we'll try to maybe see if we can make a see him in some of the kashrus. So we'll stop.